Hi everyone, welcome to Better Together, an As We podcast. For future reference, As We, as in A-S-W-E, stands for the Alzheimer's Society of Windsor and Essex County. This podcast will feature engaging conversations with guests ranging from community leaders to care partners and persons living with dementia to raise awareness about this disease. You're listening to Better Together, an As We podcast, and this is episode 32. My name is Cindy, and I'm joined today by Holly Lusher. Holly is a care partner to her grandpa. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So, this is very different because I haven't done a young care partner yet. You're our first one here.
Oh my goodness.
And I just want the audience to get to know you a little bit more. Tell us about your home life, what you're doing right now, and how you became involved with your grandpa's care.
Absolutely. So hi, everybody. My name is Holly Lusher. I am 24 years old, and I am currently a caregiver to my grandfather, Richard. So my home life is pretty wonderful. I grew up and still live in Colchester, Ontario, on the beach, and I actually have grown up right across the street from my grandma and grandpa. I have four brothers, two of whom are my older brothers, and then the other two are actually my triplets. So I'd say I've had a pretty interesting upbringing with those four and then my grandparents right across the street. I went through the French education system here in Windsor, Essex. I absolutely loved it. I graduated from the University of Windsor in 2022 with a bachelor's in kinesiology and a minor in psychology. And I've been quite lucky enough to work a little bit all over Canada, and maybe I can say the world. I've worked for Banff National Park and Veterans Affairs Canada. And in 2022, I actually went away for 8 months to work for Veterans Affairs at the Canadian National Vimy Memorial. And whenever I'm away for these work stints, I always make sure to FaceTime my grandma and grandpa. And it was in 2022 when my family started to realize that my grandfather was slowly declining in some ways and starting to have a couple memory issues. And once I came back from France, of course, I moved back home. And that's when everything really changed. My grandma reached out for help to my mom. And we really realized then that it was more than just a little bit of memory issues that were starting to happen with Richard.
Mm-hmm. So let's backtrack just a little bit because you have a long list of things that you mentioned there. So what made you get into the job that was was that in France?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So what made you get into that?
Oh boy. Okay. Ready? This is kind of a long story.
Yes. I want to hear it.
So I was in high school, little me in grade 10, and I saw this lady dressed up in this kit from the 1800s, and she was sitting in our school lobby, and I felt really bad for her because nobody was talking to her. Mm-hmm. So I went and chatted with her, and turns out she was a representative from Fort Malden, National Historic Site in Amherstburg. Okay. So she was there trying to promote their job for high school students. And so I had gotten a business card. I didn't think anything of it because I didn't really have an interest in history. And then my mom picked me up from school that night and she says, "Oh my gosh, Government of Canada, Parks Canada, you need to work there." And I was like, "Really? I guess." So I ended up applying for the job. And then in 2016, I worked my first, I'll say, big girl job at Fort Malden National Historic Site. I was a soldier. I loved it so much, and it's actually there where I had heard about the opportunity to work as a student guide in France. Yeah. So to do that, I had to be a university student, so I worked 3 summers with Parks Canada at Fort Malden in Amherstburg, mm-hmm. really found a love for history. It was super awesome getting to have a job where I could work in both French and English. And then once I got into my first year of university, I applied to the Canadian National Vimy Memorial with Veterans Affairs Canada. I was very, very lucky at 18 to have been granted an interview, and then I got the job, which was super cool. So I moved to France for the first time at 18. I moved there for 4 months, so it was during the summertime, and it was the best experience ever. I had a wonderful time. It was so cool getting to represent Canada on that international scale and meet visitors from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And then I came home, went into my second year of university, and that brought us to the 2020 COVID pandemic. So I ended up staying home for that summer, and then I worked in Banff National Park in 2021. I couldn't go back to France yet, so I figured why not move to the Rockies for 4 months and enjoy that, and it was absolutely wonderful. I lived there with my boyfriend and our 2, which turned into 3 dogs.
Wow. You have 3 dogs right now?
I have 3 dogs right now.
Oh my gosh.
So we moved to Banff with 2 dogs. Mm-hmm. And then while we're in the Rockies, Brian, one of my boyfriend's name is Brian. One of his dogs is a Samoyed Husky who was having a couple like stomach issues. So he was bringing her to the vet. And the vet there was like, "So you really like Huskies, eh?" And he says, "Yeah." And there was this husky that was from the Northwest Territories who had had his paws broken at 2 weeks old. And they didn't have the tech up there to do the surgery that they needed. So they actually sent him all the way down to Calgary. Mm-hmm. He got the surgery. He was living with a foster mom as he was, like, in his crate because he wasn't allowed to walk. And the vet asked Brian if he wanted to adopt. His name's Bandit. So Brian surprised me, and we then had 3 doggies.
And you took them back to Windsor with you, too, after?
Yep.
Are they living with you or your boyfriend right now?
So the 2 huskies are with my boyfriend right now, and then my German short-haired pointer is with me.
Oh, my. How big is he?
Which one?
The German.
The German short-haired pointer. Yeah. She's actually really small for a GSP. She's about 55 pounds.
Okay.
But usually, like, they go up to about 80 pounds, but she's definitely, like, on the small side. I think I got the runt to the litter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you went to Banff.
Yes.
What came after?
What came after? So after Banff, I was in my 4th year. So final year of university. And I was still in line because of the pandemic. And finally, in winter of 2022, the Canadian Student Guide program in France opened back up.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with the government, super complicated to get, you know, a bunch of little student guides over to France with all of the regulations. So they kind of had a half session in the winter, and then I was able to come back for the first full session since the pandemic had been declared. So I left for France in April of 2022,
mm-hmm.
and I was actually able to stay as the team lead all the way until December of 2022. So I was the mentor guide for a summer session, and then the sole mentor guide for a fall session.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yes.
Would you go back?
Absolutely.
Have you thought about it, or?
It's been such a interesting journey and a really tough decision not to go back,
mm-hmm.
because I think I would have loved going there. We kind of talked about if I wanted to step up to PM1 position, supervisor position, and it was really tearing at my heartstrings because I had made this whole family there and a wonderful support system. I loved my job. I
mm-hmm.
still do. But I realized that I had dreams that I wanted to follow back home. So I had to make the really tough decision to come home and stay home.
Mm-hmm. Every time I talk to you, I just want to, I get literal goosebumps.
I love talking to you. I love talking to you.
I'm so excited for everyone to learn more about you and for you to just tell your story because it's so fascinating.
Oh my goodness.
I really have goosebumps.
Thank you. Stop. You're going to make me blush.
Okay, so your dreams and aspirations. This is when this is what you're dealing with right now.
Yes. Yes. So when I was in university, I thought I wanted to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to go get my master's of education. I was probably going to teach science and biology and then probably go into spec ed. But while I was in France, everything pretty much changed. I was like, you know what? I don't really want to be a teacher anymore. I want to be a doctor. Why not? I'm going to go home. I'm going to write the MCAT and I'm going to apply to med school. And this is the journey that I have been on since I came home from France in December of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks later, I started studying for the MCAT. Oh my goodness, what a journey that was. I wrote my first MCAT last year. I applied to medical school, and it was during this time when everything started happening with my grandparents as well. But I was blessed and lucky enough to have been invited for an interview by the Northern Ontario School of Medicine. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for this year, but I just submitted my applications again, wrote my MCAT again, and we're going to try for the next time.
Mm-hmm. And that's when you and I met.
Yes.
At one of the social programs with the Alzheimer's Study, so Minds and Motions, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
When we were talking about this whole process, it's very rare for someone to write the MCAT for the first time and then receive this type of interview, right?
Oh my gosh, yes. Especially as a, I'll say, like, non-traditional, non-pre-med student.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was in university, I heard that there were some people in my program who wanted to become doctors. That was absolutely never on my radar. I never thought it was possible, and I didn't have any doctors in my life, so I didn't really look at it as, like, an option that I could actually do. So I didn't have any of the prereqs
mm-hmm.
for the MCAT, so no organic chemistry, physics, biology, or anything like that. So it has definitely been an interesting journey, and as we know in Canada, it's very difficult to get into med school. Oh my goodness, most universities have a 1-2% acceptance rate.
Mm-hmm.
On average, it takes about 3 cycles to get in. So, you know, when I started finally meeting some people who were in this field and applying, they're like, wait, what do you mean you got an interview? And I was like, yeah, yeah, I got an interview. It's fine. I'm excited. And they're like, wait, like that does not happen. So I've been feeling super blessed. And even though the rejection, as you know, Cindy, was very difficult, I cried to Cindy for like a whole hour, by the way.
We talked it out.
I got better soul healing conversation. I took it really tough, but I also am trying to see it as what a blessing it's been, what a learning opportunity it's been, and how special it is to have that, this moving forward, knowing that, okay, the potential is there. Mm-hmm. We just need to try again, keep getting more experience, and we go from there.
What do you think the switch was from wanting to be a teacher to wanting to be a doctor? Because you said you had that switch in France.
Yeah.
What was it?
I think what it was, so obviously in France, I got to talk to so many people all the time. Every day I was meeting hundreds and hundreds of people from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And as much as I loved teaching, I kind of realized that with the pandemic and everything like that, teaching wasn't quite what I wanted to do anymore. And there's also been a couple other experiences in my life where, by some measure of fate, I've been a part of a couple emergency situations. And with a lot of thinking, obviously I was alone a lot in France, I thought back to a lot of those times and realized in some way, not that I enjoyed being in emergency situations, but being able to be a part and helping in those was really fulfilling. Mm-hmm. On the inside. And with loving to be around individuals and helping them, and with the set of skills that I have, I felt like going into the pathway of medicine would be where I would be of most value to mm-hmm. society.
So you saying this just confirms, just for everyone listening, what kind of person you are. Because when I first met Holly and everyone in the group met you, we all felt the same thing. Like, you have this like energy about you that is just so inviting. You're very comforting, like the way that you take care of your grandpa. Oh my goodness.
Thank you.
I love seeing it. But I wanted everyone to hear why you wanted to become a doctor, because I feel like this is the perfect role for you. And I just go back to that conversation that we had in the kitchen. And it just confirms too, us talking about perfect timing. And God's timing too, right?
Absolutely.
You come back from France, and this is when all of the things that you're learning about your grandpa, it all changing, the diagnosis, and he loves having you around.
He does.
Your mom loves having you at home to help and to be with, and to have you as her support system as well. So I was just thinking about that, like, you know, trying to comfort you in those ways, because I feel like your grandpa really, really appreciates you having here, your whole family. So can we talk about when you came home and the diagnosis and how that affected you?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So while I was studying for the MCAT, obviously it was a really busy time. And at that point, it was still just little things with grandpa. Like my grandma had said, when driving, because he was the only one who could drive because her vision's quite bad, he was starting to get lost, starting to get pretty confused when driving, was starting to run stop signs. And that's when my grandma asked for help. And this was in April mm-hmm. of 2022.
Was she the only one who noticed it, or everyone else?
So my mom and dad had noticed just some slight memory problems coming up. But I think inside the home, there was a lot more to it that grandma wasn't talking about. Mm. And it wasn't until April of that year where she asked my mom to help mm-hmm. and that things were a lot worse than it had seemed. And so quickly, I think all of our lives changed that spring. Mom actually decided to become a full-time caregiver to my grandma and grandpa because they absolutely needed the support. We quickly got connected with the Alzheimer's Society. You know, we were doing all of our Googling, what do we do, talking to the doctors. So first things first was we got a diagnosis. It was, in fact, dementia, Alzheimer's. And once we got that diagnosis, we got a social worker here with the Alzheimer's Society, and it has just been a journey since then. But we tried to take action as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. We knew that we had dementia. We kind of knew what we were dealing with. We were trying to figure out, you know, is there another underlying cause? Is there any way that, you know, we can stop this or reverse it? But we realized there really wasn't anything else to it. But you know, we were trying to be really proactive and get supports, get connected with you guys before it became a crisis.
Mm-hmm. And you said that while you were in France or away, and you would FaceTime your grandparents a lot.
Yeah.
Did you notice changes through those FaceTimes?
A little bit, especially, you know what, you asking me that right now, it's interesting, the FaceTimes when I was in France from 2019 to 2022 were very different. In 2019, my grandpa was a lot more involved and chatting with me and knew that I was in France and knew that he was talking to me through his iPad. But I did notice in 2022, he had become a lot more quiet. But at the time, I didn't really think much of it. I just thought, you know, there's a 6-hour time difference. Mm-hmm. He's getting old. Maybe he's just unsure that, you know, how is it that my granddaughter's talking to me through this iPad halfway around the world? And I just thought that my grandma was just taking over and wanting to chat with me. So I actually didn't really see it. And even at the beginning when grandma had approached us and said, like, I really need help, it wasn't until I would kind of see him in those, I'll call them episodes, because mm-hmm. grandpa has sundowners. Yeah. Where it really became obvious, like, okay, this, things have changed. Mm-hmm. Things have really changed.
So besides you and your mom, who else is involved with his care? And how important is it for, you know, a number of you guys to be helping with your grandpa's care?
Okay, we are so lucky to have such a wonderful support system, especially living across the street from my grandparents. It's super easy for us to do all of their grocery shopping, which we started doing during the pandemic. My dad also lives at home with us, so he's been a huge part of this journey. All of my mom's siblings have been helping out, and even my cousins come out and help. So it's been really wonderful having all of this support. Especially for my dad, I don't think I've actually told you this before, but my other grandfather, I call him my Pippi, he got COVID in October of 2022 while I was in France, mm-hmm. and that was actually the start of his decline. We didn't know it at the time. We weren't as close with my Pip as we are with my mom's side of the family, mm-hmm. But he ended up having dementia as well, and I think with COVID, it really escalated his process, and he ended up passing away in March.
Wow.
Yeah. Last March.
Last March, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and then in April, my grandma was like, I need help with my other grandfather. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, in some way, my Pippi taught us a bunch of these lessons and taught us, you know, kind of what to do, the protocol, when to call 911. And then it was like, okay, now you got to help your other grandfather. He mm-hmm. needs your help as well.
You talking about this, it's very rare for like grandchildren to be stepping up and taking care of their grandparents.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm seeing it more often.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that you're talking about this because, you know, a lot of people wouldn't even know what to do if they were in your shoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that you've learned along the way throughout this whole process and journey?
Oh my goodness.
Like both grandparents, though. I didn't know about it.
Yeah. Grandparent. Yeah. I've learned so much. Oh my goodness. And it's funny that you say that because, you know, I've been trying to be really involved with the Alzheimer's Society, trying to go to a lot of education seminars, and even before we had, you know, the official diagnosis and everything, my mom and I had gone to one of the talks that Rosemary had done.
Yes.
And it was kind of just about Alzheimer's, and that really confirmed. I was like, okay, grandpa needs to get connected here. He has Alzheimer's. This is what we're dealing with. And it's been a really special journey. I mean, I grew up across the street from grandma and grandpa. My whole life, I've lived in the same house. They lived in the same house my entire life. I guess they lived next to me and then 8 years later across the street.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been really blessed to have a really close connection with them. You know, not only are they in the same county as me, but quite literally right there. They were obviously a huge part of my life growing up with my mom having triplets. That would have been impossible to deal with without all of the support systems. So when things started to decline with, I'll say, both of my grandfathers, I didn't see how I would be able to continue on without being a part of their lives, especially as I've gotten older. You know, in high school, I'll say, you kind of start to realize that everybody's grandparents are slowly starting to pass away.
Mm-hmm.
And to picture life without them is heart-wrenching. However, one piece of comfort that I could give to myself was if I can just be there and do everything that I can in my final years with them, I think that it'll bring me a lot more peace and comfort knowing that I'll probably start crying.
I know, you're gonna make me start crying because it literally brings me back to our conversation.
Knowing that I can be a part of their lives, I love them so much, and I want to be here for them, for my mom, for my dad,
mm-hmm.
And I feel like I owe them the moon and more. So this is like the least I could do. And I want to be there helping them and, you know, making their final years a little bit better.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And I swear that rejection from that interview was like, not yet, Holly.
Yeah.
You still have some things to do.
You need.
So, yeah, to be here for your family, for your grandpa, your mom especially. Oh my gosh, you two remind me of each other so much.
Oh my gosh.
You guys are the same, like, oh, just,
We walked
the
in.
Best people ever.
We walked into the one education seminar. We did the two-day class, or is it one day? Anyways, it was back in the spring with Rosemary, and she says, oh, I can tell you're related. Like, my mom is genuinely my best friend. And so, you know, a big part of this, too, has been being there for each other. Being a caregiver is not easy. It's been really wonderful that caregiver burnout has become a lot more of a popular topic and one that everybody is trying to address. But like, I see my mom every single day working her butt off, trying to bring grandpa to all of the programs that we have him in, every single doctor's appointment, haircuts, we're cooking all the meals, doing all the groceries. It's exhausting. And just, you know, dealing with the dementia and the confusion and sometimes the really difficult days, it definitely takes a toll.
And on top of the, you know, the caregiving, you're having to grieve the relationship that you did have with your grandpa, the relationship your mom had with her dad, right, growing up. And a lot of people don't talk about that part, right?
Absolutely.
Well, actually, there's no time to, really,
because
you're trying to stay afloat and, take care of your grandpa, but can you talk a little bit about the grieving process and how it has been for you?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm actually so glad that you brought this up because I think, so, my family, we're very open. There's no time for not talking and no communication. So I've been really lucky to be raised in a family where every topic is up for discussion with anybody in the house. And so my mom and I have talked about it a lot in a sense where we have both, I'm not going to say fully grieved, but have grieved, I'll say the death of my grandfather, and maybe not the death, but who he was. He isn't the same. And it's like when I left for France back in April of that year, I didn't realize that I would be saying goodbye to the version of my grandfather that I had always known. And I would be coming home to a new version and things would never be the same. So having to come to terms with that and watch him go from this strong, independent, kind, autonomous man to what he is now is definitely something that's been hard. And watching my mom and dad, it's okay, watching my mom and dad, you know, deal with this as well and also grieve, you know, for my mom, her father, and my dad, thank you, his father-in-law, it's been difficult, but what brings me comfort is just knowing how blessed I have been with him. I can't look back and be anything but happy and thankful for the life that I've had with them, so I know that it's okay.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't want to cry during this whip, but
that's okay. And like, I'm glad that we're crying because, you know, we can show people that this is a really heavy topic. You know, sometimes it'll be 9 o'clock at night and my mom and I are sitting on the couch and she'll look at me and she'll say, Holly. I say, yes, mom. She says, this is really hard. This is really sad. I was like, you know what? It is. She's like, sometimes I feel like I can't cry and I feel like is it bad that I'm grieving the loss of my dad? And no.
And he's still alive.
And he's still alive. I don't think that we can reserve any judgment for the self through that because this journey is so difficult. You know, when you go from your independent dad, and I'll talk a little bit later about, you know, who Richard was, to having to show him how to take his clothes on and off and put on his pajamas and a lot of the interesting things that he's done since having dementia, I don't think that it's fair to judge ourselves.
And on Monday when we were talking, I was driving home from the Hero Health Center and I kept thinking about how you said that he didn't know who his wife was. And that made me so sad. I thought about it the whole drive home because could you imagine being married to someone for this amount of years, mm-hmm. living this beautiful life with them, and then them not knowing who you are
yeah.
inside your own home?
Yeah.
Your grandma, like, how is she?
She is so strong. And I feel so bad for her. So, a little background. My grandma and grandpa met at a party when they were 16. And they dated ever since.
Oh, my gosh.
It has only ever been Mary and Richard. And when I think of the strongest power couple that I can possibly imagine, it's them. It wasn't easy for them to date. Actually, my grandma's father forbid them from being together. So they actually had to sneak out of the house for their wedding. Grandma's mom snuck out. All of grandma's siblings snuck out for the wedding. And they got married, and they have made an incredible family, a wonderful life. They are so in love with each other. It's so beautiful. He still calls her kid when he does know who she is. And I have never heard a negative thing come out of either of their mouths about each other. They have just been this wonderful pillar and example of kindness and love and graciousness towards each other. And so to see and know that, you know, their final years together as a couple, I'm not going to say are negative because I don't want to look at any of this in such a negative point of view, but are the struggle and challenges that it is, my heart breaks for them because I never wanted their life, you know, as Mary and Richard to end in this way.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Oh, wow.
And kind of to add to that, you know, I tell her, like, I'll be like, Grandma, I feel so bad for you. Mm-hmm. This is heartbreaking. How are you doing this? Grandma was a nurse, so I don't know if everybody else has the same story with nurse grandmothers, but she, like, everything's fine mm-hmm. and is very strong and resilient, and I think she kind of deals with everything on the inside. But she looks at me and says, you know, when I married your grandfather, we made a vow mm-hmm. in sickness and in health till death do us part, and she says, I'm going to keep that vow. And I'm going to do everything I can, keep him home as long as I can, and love him until the very end. This is what we promised each other. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, how she continues to keep going and smile somehow every day through this.
It just shows how strong she is when she asked for help.
It is, and oh my goodness.
It probably took a lot.
Absolutely, and still does. Mm-hmm. It still takes a lot, you know, to realize that she needs to call over to our house and have us come over and help him, you know. Except that we're cooking dinner and bringing over the groceries and everything. It's hard to ask for help, especially when, you know, she's kind of lost that independence where she can't do this on her own. Mm-hmm. And in fact, like, none of us can do this on our own. And even as a whole family, it's still challenging
right.
with all the support that we have.
Whew. Going on to that topic, what are some advice you have for new care partners?
Be gentle on yourself. This is not easy. And dealing with somebody with dementia can be very difficult and frustrating. Honestly, one of the best things that we did as a family and as caregivers, my mom and I, was to come to the Alzheimer's Society and attend educational sessions. So we did education for the caregiver, and we've learned so much on how to be, you know, a better caregiver for somebody with dementia, and really understanding the disease and how to deal with it has been life-changing. The biggest thing I would say that I've taken away from this is don't correct. How easy is it? You know, my grandpa will say, we went out for my mom's birthday last winter in February, and he looks at me and says, did Jean turn 23? And instead of saying, no, grandpa, you know, she turned whatever, you say, you know what? She really does look like she's 23, doesn't she? And redirecting and, you know, dealing with it in that sense and being gentle and, you know, really getting on their level has been so helpful. Mm-hmm. But, like, without the education, I feel like I would be a lot more lost as to what to do and how to help.
Mm-hmm. I know, and I can see you, like, when we're working together in some of the programs, I can see you, like, thinking about things before you say or do mm-hmm. things too, which is really cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like taking that moment to just take in what's happening and not reacting right away.
Yeah.
And I see you and your mom do that a lot.
We,
it's very, very important.
We try, because I think for us, like, the biggest thing is we just want to be the best caregivers that we can be. We want grandpa to be happy. We want to support him. Mm-hmm. And we were like, at first we were like, we don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
We've never really dealt with this before. What do you say at 12 o'clock at night when grandpa doesn't know who any of us are and doesn't know what house he's in and thinks that, you know, there's danger outside and that his house is across the street and he needs to go home? So really learning how to navigate all of these situations has been really helpful. Even, like, kind of a funny example, last week I was at Memory Cafe with them,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's talking about Thanksgiving, right? Because Thanksgiving is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had asked him, oh, like, Richard, how many grandchildren do you have? Like, how many granddaughters? And he says, oh, I have so many granddaughters. And they said, oh, really? How many? He says, I don't know, but I have a lot of granddaughters. I'm his only granddaughter.
That's why you say you're the favorite one.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I said, yeah, you do have a lot of grandkids. You do, Grandpa. You have myself, Zachary Avery, Noah Jacob, Michael Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, you can't get frustrated with them because it's not his fault.
Yep.
It's never his fault. And, you know, I feel bad. I can see him when he's walking. You know, his depth perception, individuals with Alzheimer's, they really struggle with that. So I can tell that he's not really sure where his feet are on the ground at all times, and he's been more unsteady. But the education piece to this has been instrumental.
I love that. And when we were doing that activity on Monday,
mm-hmm.
he used to be a tool. What did he do for
work? Ah, he was a tool maker.
Yes.
Yeah, for GM.
So on Monday, for example, we did dexterity. We worked on dexterity, and we did shapes with snowflakes and things like that using scissors. And his version of that was very interesting to see. He wanted a ruler,
yep.
to trace out lines for his snowflake.
Yep, and to get the perfect angles. And yeah. I was laughing so hard when I came home, because I was like, I dropped him off at his house, and I went and talked to Grandma, and I said, oh my goodness, he's such a tool maker.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny. It comes out in so much that he does. And you know, even though I'll say, like, he didn't do the activity like everybody else,
yeah,
did it.
He still did it.
He made it his own, mm-hmm. and he did it his way and thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's really cool to see, because the short-term memory is not there, but the long-term.
The long-term is, yeah. so there.
He was so precise. Like, every triangle that he cut out and traced,
yeah.
was the exact same size.
Yeah, he is so talented. Before the dementia, he was the best handyman ever. He would help us with projects all the time. His basement is still this, like, massive workshop with all the tools on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually embroider, and I had gotten this, like, embroidery hoop holder that you can put on your lap,
mm-hmm.
and it clips your circular hoop into it. And I really wanted him to make me one. Mm-hmm. I wanted an heirloom piece and something made by my grandpa. So I gave him the one that I had bought online for like $20. And I was like, Grandpa, can you please make me a version of this yourself? Make it out of wood. And he did. He somehow measured everything, bought all the tools that he needed. Grandpa loved Lee Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And he built me this beautiful embroidery hoop holder that has his name signed on the bottom of it. That was one of the last projects he did. Unfortunately, now he cannot build anything, but he is good at his job.
I'm so happy you did that.
I'm so happy. It makes my heart so warm. And he has his name signed on the bottom of it. And I'm so thankful that I have something like that now, a piece that I will hold with me forever. And that was made with so much love and precision.
Yes.
But
one thing I learned about Bridget is very precise.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Very, very precise. I think he was using the edge of the scissors to trace before we gave him the, yeah. wooden.
Yeah, the popsicle, yes. stick. Yeah.
And he was so happy about that.
Oh yeah. He's so good. Like, even one time we had to, like, my brother, one of my triplets, was trying to build something for the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to say it was a mistake that he asked Grandpa, but, like, a 2-hour project turned into a 12-hour project because he had to make sure that it was done absolutely correctly and it was the best cover that we could have possibly made for our boat.
See, and he got to spend 12 hours with his grandpa rather than two. Right?
Exactly, so exactly.
It's honestly amazing. Now going back to the disease,
mm-hmm.
why do you think it's important to keep talking about Alzheimer's disease and spreading awareness about this? Because still to this day, a lot of people don't know what it is,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people still think that it's just an old person's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've seen from Memory Cafe and Minds and Motions the different ages that we have for our clients. So why do you think it's important?
It's so important because, you know, Alzheimer's disease and dementia is not a normal part of aging. This is not just something that happens to old people. It's not simply issues with the memory. Dementia extends super far beyond that. And I think that when we're talking about people that we love and their quality of life, simply doing nothing about it, I think, can have a really large impact on people's quality of life. But when we take the steps that are necessary to get supports, get them in with the Alzheimer's Society, go to different programs, like we do Minds in Motion, we do the Day Away program, we do the Memory Cafe, it makes such a difference, not only for those living with dementia, but quite literally for everybody else, for the caregivers, for the spouses. And as you were saying, it's not just seniors. There are some individuals who are actually like young in their 50s, 60s, and 70s who are struggling with dementia. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think from what we had learned in another education seminar as well is individuals with, there's a couple individuals with Down syndrome who are in their 30s and 40s who have dementia. And I don't think that's really public knowledge, and spreading awareness about how it can quite literally impact everybody at much younger ages than we expect would really help with getting the care that everyone needs.
And deserves.
And deserves.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You said it perfectly. The age range is all over the place now, and that's why I'm really happy that you're here, because they can see, you know, a young 24-year-old woman who still has her whole life ahead of her, who is super busy. You literally do a thousand million things.
Chaos.
I don't even know how you get it all done, but you still take the time to, you know, care for your grandpa and your grandma, and you're literally on a podcast with me right now, and you live in Colchester, so it just shows what kind of person you are. So I'm really happy that you're, you know, spreading awareness and being very mindful of it too. What are some things that you would say to your grandpa now if you, from, like, what would you say to him before that you didn't say to him at all?
Yeah, this is the one that I was thinking about the most. I had the chance to read some of these questions ahead of time. And, you know, I say it now to my grandma and my mim. She's my dad's mother. I would thank him. I would thank him for being the most wonderful grandfather I could have ever asked for. And I wish that I could tell him that growing up with him across the street, waving at him every time I would walk down to the beach, has been the absolute biggest blessing of my life. And I'm so lucky to have grown up with the grandparents that I have, with the support that they've given me. Having him over for dinner and him smiling and him joking has impacted me and, you know, changed my growth as an individual. And I wish that he knew how much life with him and grandma has meant to me growing up.
You're very, very blessed, Holly.
I am. And I, the thing is like, I know it, and I don't know how I got so lucky to have the family that I didn't. It's funny, you know, grandma always says, you just have such wonderful parents. You know, you have, your mom and dad had 5 kids and you all turned out so well. And realistically, statistically, that shouldn't have necessarily been the case. 5 kids, chances are that, you know, at least one or two of us would have maybe fallen off the rails, and that didn't happen. And I say it's because my parents were raised by such incredible people.
Yes.
This would not be possible without you. Like, grandma and grandpa were at my house every day, or were at their house every day. They were such a big part of our lives growing up, and I think growing up so closely to them made us very wise as younger individuals. And I'm so thankful for them. And even though I know that the day is coming, I just want to spend every minute with them that I can, because I know that one day when they're gone, I'm going to miss them so much. My mom still talks about her grandmother, and I wish that I could have met her because she was such a wonderful person, and I know that that's what my grandparents are going to be to my children one day, is somebody that I still know as a wonderful person, or they know, even though they never met them.
Yeah. Your whole family. Your whole family is beautiful. You guys just exude, like, positivity, love, grace. Oh, my gosh. The best people ever. I told your mom, like, I've never met a whole family where everyone's soul is just so beautiful and precious. Oh, my gosh. You literally got me in tears here. We're gonna go right into our rapid-fire questions, okay?
Yes.
These five questions are all random. Mm-hmm. And they're gonna allow the audience to get to know a little bit more about you. Mm-hmm. One word, one sentence, however you want to answer it.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. If you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with that extra time?
Knit.
If you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Sushi.
What would your perfect Sunday look like?
Spending the entire day on the beach on my grandparents' property. And sitting on a towel on the warm sand with my dogs and boyfriend and my knitting.
Perfect. And what could you give a 40-minute presentation on with absolutely no preparation?
The history of World War One and Canadians in the...
Really? Yeah. Interesting.
Canadians in the First World War and specifically the Canadians at Vimy Ridge.
Okay, this is great. I learned something new about you.
Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice someone has ever given you?
Oh, this is a good one. Probably to find the positive in every single situation and find a way to exude resiliency from the tough times. Everything has a silver lining somehow. I know it sounds cliche, but it does. Mm-hmm. And you can either grow from it or get broken down. And when you can grow, it changes you.
Mm-hmm. And beautiful things happen.
Yes.
You're literally the best person ever. Thank you so much, Holly. It was a pleasure speaking with you today. I hope our listeners have gained a better understanding about what it entails to be a care partner. What you're doing is not easy, and I'm really grateful for you sharing your story here with us today. I'm also very grateful for meeting you. It's been a blessing, honestly.
Thank you.
Every time I see you, you and your mom give the best hugs, and you guys are just filled with so much love, and I wish the absolute world for you guys and for your career, your future career path, which is amazing. So, hey, listeners, my call to action for all of you, how can you help? Educate yourself and encourage others to do the same. Refer your circle of friends and family to our services. Support our events and fundraising campaigns and become a dementia-friendly community. Listen to new episodes on the last Friday of every month on our YouTube channel, Alzheimer Windsor. And it's also available on Spotify and Amazon Music. Help for today, hope for tomorrow, and remember, we are better together. Thank you so much, Holly.
Thank you.